Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Children who were raised in a methamphetamine-affected home grow up in the shadows. They're forgotten. The drug is the number one priority. We're dealing with methamphetamine by holding those accountable who use, manufacture, and distribute methamphetamine in the traditional prosecution sense. So we've taken a victim-first approach to try to help those children in any way we possibly can through our office. When our children are disadvantaged, it affects everyone in our community. It affects everyone in that classroom when they go to school, if they go to school. It affects our healthcare system. It affects the well-being of our community in every way, shape, and form. The entire community needs to get involved to deal with the difficulties of alcohol and narcotics abuse. It is everyone's problem.
It is everyone's problem. That's the voice of attorney Eric Peterson talking about a problem that occupies too much of his time. One that he can't solve as a prosecutor, one that all the cops and detectives in the world can't solve. The problem of drug addiction, specifically methamphetamine addiction, and the wasted families left in its wake. Today we're going to look at the most vulnerable and innocent victims of drugs, the children who grow up in the homes of dealers, users, and addicts. Our guest today, Sue Reitz of Rosinski & Reitz Communications. Sue produced a compelling, award-winning documentary on this subject called Living in Shadows, The Innocent Victims of Meth. And today, we'll talk to her about the people she interviewed, parents, step-parents, and children, and we'll listen to their words as they describe their broken homes and broken dreams. Also with us this afternoon, Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, an advocacy group trying to unravel the many threads of a seemingly unsolvable problem. Now, as always, we want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments, or maybe you've got experience with methamphetamine or other drugs, you've seen what they've done to you or your children or families that you know, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 261-6371, 261-6371, or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. 9742. Sue and Andrea, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Sue, let's start off by talking about the documentary. Just tell us about it. What do you find so compelling about the subject that led you to produce this very compelling 25 minutes of film?
Well, I've done a series of programs on different social issues and crime reduction programs. And one thing that kept turning up was that, you know, adults make a choice to use a drug, and often, you know, they become addicted to it. But the children in the home have no say in the matter whatsoever. And, you know, we weren't really hearing from them. We were hearing about them anecdotally, but we weren't hearing from them. So I wanted to give a voice to the kids.
How did you go about doing that? How did you find the children and the families to interview?
Well, again, because of the other videos I've done, I've gotten to know a lot of people in treatment and social service and law enforcement. And when I told them what I was doing, they were very helpful in putting me in touch with people who then put me in touch, sort of that 6 degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm. How, once you found the people to interview, how did you get them to open up on camera? Because it's not an easy thing to talk about.
No, it's not. And many of them were in tears at different points during the interviews. But I think, you know, the way I approached them was, I understand you've been through a horrible time, and here's what I'm trying to do. And my goal is to make life better for other kids who are still living in these kinds of situations. And with that in mind, they were more than willing to share their perspectives and their experiences.
Because you talked to some young people, Amanda, who was 19 and had a horrendous experience growing up, and a young lady named Jade, who I believe is only 11 years old.
Correct.
It's not easy to get kids to talk about something like that.
Right. And she was definitely the most challenging person to interview, just because She was nervous. She really wanted to do the interview. I had talked to her a number of times on the telephone before we actually came to tape the interview. But children are just not quite as articulate as teenagers or adults. But she, you know, what she said was so heartfelt and so sincere and so true.
Yeah, we'll be hearing from both Amanda and Jade some of their words from this documentary a little bit later. in the program today. Our other guest, Andrea Lestarge. Andrea, tell us about your organization.
Thanks. The Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children is a statewide organization. We have government agencies from local, statewide, federal that are all trying to assist communities in assessing the service needs and coordinating their efforts to really bring to light that these children are victims. We want to identify them and then bring resources to them and their families.
Is this something that's being done in other states around the Union?
It is. As a matter of fact, there's 27 different states that are all participating in these efforts. Wisconsin started their efforts in about 2005.
Now, I understand that you work for the U.S. Attorney's Office, but yet it's a Wisconsin program. How does that work?
Sure. Again, there's federal, state, and local government agencies that are all a part of this. So the U.S. Attorney's Office received a grant. Barb Williams, the victim witness coordinator there, actually wrote it. It was received from Office for Victims of Crime and the Executive Office for U.S. Attorneys. And with that money, they were able to establish a program coordinator. That's kind of where I come in.
And I want to mention at this time that if you'd like a copy of the documentary Living in Shadows, we are going to be hearing portions of it, or you want to find out more about what's being done for kids who are growing up in drug homes and having a rough time of it, you can reach Andrea's organization at 1-888-415-9821. That's 888-415-9821. Or you can simply log on to wisconsindec.org. That's wisconsindec.org. If you do that, you can download the Living in Shadows documentary for free?
For free, yes.
Andrea, you're a young lady. You're optimistic. You got a big smile on your face, and you're dealing with some horrendous things here. How did you end up doing this?
Well, I smile because I'm just really ecstatic that so many people do care about this topic. I actually started off in teaching. I was a high school English teacher.
And where was that?
That was in Madison, Wisconsin. And I was astonished that through all of the education that I had, we never really talked about the hard stuff that some of our students are going through. We were talking about, you know, bolstering their test scores and making sure that they are on the right track. But we never found out if Johnny doesn't come to school one day, there might be more issues behind that situation. If Tanya is not handing in her homework, we need to ask why is that day after day.
Did you ever suspect that some of your kids might have been living in drug homes and that was why they were having problems with their studies?
Did I suspect it? Probably. Did I have that term, drug endangered children? No, not until I got into the criminal justice side of my profession and then started realizing that this is a complete it's a term, it's a phenomena that's occurring.
So as a teacher, how would kids react if they came from drug addicted households? What are some of the problems you'd see?
You know, it's almost two different sides of the spectrum. On one side, you have a child that is going to be completely non-affected by it. They're almost going to have this great resiliency. And on the other side, you're going to see exactly what you see in the documentary, where some kids, they don't have an affect. They can't smile. They don't have any energy. And you keep wondering, why are you not provoking that energy? What's going on inside your life?
We're going to be listening to some of the stories of these children and some of the stories of adults who are taking care of them and adults who grew up in similar situations and are now struggling to get their lives together in just a minute. And again, we do want to encourage you to call in with your own stories, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryan Lawyer at 1-800-749-3906.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, and today we are talking about children who grow up in drug-addicted homes. We have with us Amanda or Andrea Lestarge, who is working with kids through a federally funded organization. And we also have with us Sue Reitz, who produced an award-winning documentary called Living in the Shadows. What awards has this won for Rosinski and Reitz?
It's won a Telly Award and an Aurora Award, and those are both international awards. And then it's also won a few local awards statewide.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's listen to a brief excerpt of the story of Amanda. She's 19 years old. She grew up in a meth home, and this is part of her story.
I remember one time my stepdad grabbing my throat and slamming me into the wall and picking me up by my throat and holding me there for a while until my mom made him stop. He started putting cigarettes out on my mom's arm. And I remember him throwing her through this big glass mirror that they had that sit on top of a dresser. Well, she took off. She worked third shift at this time. And she took off and left. And he woke me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and showed me how to do meth. The worst thing I can remember is when I was 15. I remember my mom and my stepdad going out. Well, I remember going to bed that night, and I woke up to somebody rubbing my butt. And then I heard my stepdad's voice. And he went further, and he molested me. I, myself, did get into an abusive relationship for a time being. It didn't obviously start off that way. And I guess I hadn't realized that somewhere along the lines, I picked up that was okay for to be mistreated like that.
Story of Amanda, a 19-year-old young lady who grew up in a meth home, and one of the subjects of the documentary Living in Shadows. If you've got a story of your own that you'd like to tell us about drugs, what you've seen them do to your friends, your families, perhaps you've got an idea of where some of the solutions lie, because this is not an easy problem. It's not something that just law enforcement can handle. We really do encourage you to give us a call, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. If you've got a personal story, we'll just identify you by your first name. Sue, Amanda's story is just chilling.
It truly is chilling, yet it does represent what so many kids go through. A child growing up in a home where drugs are used, sold, or manufactured, is especially methamphetamine, is at a much greater risk of neglect, sexual abuse, physical abuse. They become parents to their younger siblings or to their parents themselves because the parents aren't coping well. It's, you know, going to school is difficult, partly because they're caring for younger siblings. The parents aren't there to support their educational efforts. You know, food is often scarce in the home because a meth addict doesn't get hungry while they're high. And then when the parent sleeps, if they're sleeping off a binge, they can sleep, you know, a day, 2 days or more. And we saw that with a local case where a baby died while the parent was sleeping off a meth binge.
And Amanda, in this case, watched as her stepfather put out cigarettes on her mother's arm, grew up in this incredibly violent household, was molested by her stepfather, and yet later in the documentary she tells us that she still loves both of them.
Right. That's sort of a conundrum, I guess, is that no matter how our parents treat us, you know, when we're kids, those are our parents, and that's what we know as normal. If you have a parent who's extremely supportive and loving, that's what you know as normal. If you have a parent who's abusive or neglectful, that's what you know as normal, and that's what's modeled for you. And then when you have children, you're more likely to be that same sort of parent.
And this is something that, Andrea, you have to deal with on a regular basis.
Absolutely. That's why we try to have any profession, any community member that could be engaging in a child's life that is also at risk of being abused or neglected because of this issue, to really understand all of the different elements that can affect these children. I recall, as Sue's talking, the national director, Lori Moriarty, gives a beautiful story where law enforcement actually comes into a home, sees that a child is labeled drug endangered, and says, wow, what crappy parents. And the kid turns around to the officer and says, yeah, well, they're my crappy parents. That is the essence of what we're talking about. It's unconditional love, and that is their normal.
And as you were mentioning, Sue, it's often a self-perpetuating cycle where kids who grow up in drug homes end up doing drugs. Amanda, in this case, her father taught her how to do it at the age of 14. Now she's got to struggle to keep herself clean. We're going to hear from another one of the subjects, a young man, Sean, apparently in his 20s, if I had to guess.
I would say he's in his 30s.
In his 30s. And he grew up in an abusive home, ended up doing drugs himself, and this is part of his story.
My mom sold a lot of different kind of drugs, methamphetamine, so marijuana, acid, coke. My father was very violent with my mother and aunt, very violent with his sons. You know, he'd fist fight with his sons. Maybe you'd see some fat lips, a bloody nose or something, getting backhanded in the face. You know, some missing hair once in a while from getting your hair pulled. And I woke up Easter at that age, the first thing you think of is Easter baskets and Easter eggs and jelly beans, you know. Got to go find that stuff. And I remember walking out of my room and seeing total destruction. I'm surprised. I remember turning the corner and looking on the floor, and there was a broom on the floor like somebody had started to clean. And on the broom handle, there was a piece of meat. Like cooking and throwing food, and it didn't make sense to me. And not 30 seconds later, my mom walked around the corner, and a whole part of her eye was gone right here underneath her eye. And that's what that was on the broom. And as a kid, that really scares you. You know, you're like, whoa, what really happened? I would say I was 11, maybe 12 the first time I tried meth. I had stole that from my mother.
And he goes on to tell stories about how he would act out by setting fires.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually set a fire large enough that it called four fire departments.
That's right.
And he said he was doing it in order to show that he could control something in his life.
That's right. These children often feel that everything is out of control. I mean, they have parents who may physically be there, but emotionally are absent. He describes his parents. I said, can you tell me about your parents in one or two words? He said, cold. Just cold. So they'll find other means to try to control things, whether it becomes bullying somebody who's younger or abusing pets in the family, which he also did, or starting fires. It's their cry for help.
And he's trying to get himself clean right now. How successful has he been?
Sean has been clean for a number of years, I think about 7 years now. And he has a good relationship with his children. He has two children from a first marriage and a daughter and a stepdaughter from a second marriage. He's got a good relationship with them. He's
and
got
those,
a steady
did those,
job.
Did those kids know him when he was an addict?
Mm-hmm. All of them did, yes.
And they're still with him?
Yes, he has visitation. Both sets of children live with their mothers.
Well, Andrea, that's got to be a tough needle to thread when you're talking about kids growing up in these households and mom or dad finally try to get themselves clean. When do you decide that it's safe for the children to be with mom and dad?
Right. The program that we're trying to implement in all different counties and tribal communities is really a matter of not only identifying these children, but then providing resources to the family. Because just as Sue's saying, there comes that time where treatment comes in. There comes that time where the families are reunified. And now we need to make whole again, which was not whole before.
the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. And again, if you would like to find out more about them, their phone number is 1-888-415-9821. That's 888-415-9821. Or you can log on to wisconsindec.org. That's wisconsindec.org. And if you do log on, you can also download the Living in Shadows documentary for free. And I understand we've got a conference on this subject coming up in Wisconsin.
Yes, we do. We have got a conference September 16th and 17th. It's actually being held at the Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. And this is a conference. It's our fourth annual one. We encourage everybody to attend this conference. Obviously, the professionals that are involved in children's lives, but even community members, because you are our key, too, in making sure that all of our children are growing up safe.
How difficult is that to get a community mobilized for something that, as you say, you're living in the shadows? This is something that people are trying to keep quiet. They're certainly not, you know, driving up and down Main Street trumpeting the fact that they come from a meth-addicted household.
You know, unfortunately, it really does take sometimes for our counties and tribal communities to come on board with these efforts. A devastation. Sometimes a child does need to get lost. Sometimes we do need to have the unfortunate responsibility of saying this child died because the mother, the father, the grandparent, the aunt, the babysitter was underneath the influence and neglected and severely abused this child to get to this point. So that's where we come in to say, if that's occurred, we are sorry, but we cannot let it happen again. And we need to start with protocols. We need to start with identifying all the different agencies that come into contact. And then on the other side, we need to say, if that hasn't occurred in your community, fantastic. Let's make sure it doesn't happen again and be proactive about it.
Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, Sue Reitz of Rusinski and Reitz Communication. Again, we want to hear from you. If you know people who have been ravished by the problems of drug abuse, perhaps you've got your own story to tell. Perhaps you've got an idea of where the solutions lie. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Rutabaga, the paddle sport shop, sharing the experience of serenity found on Wisconsin lakes and rivers. Instruction for all ages and abilities with test paddling every day. 220 West Broadway in Monona or on the web at rutabaga.com.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. If you just joined us, we are talking about children who grow up in drug homes, specifically meth homes. And we'll be talking about why that particular substance has particularly onerous ramifications with Sue Reitz of Rusinski and Reitz Communication. She's produced an award-winning documentary called Living in Shadows, The Innocent Victims of Meth. Also joining us, she drove up here from Madison, and we're very happy that she did that, Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. And I want to encourage those of you who are listening to join us as well. The phone number is 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. What do you think the solution is to the drug problem? Obviously, it's not all law enforcement. It's not cops. It's not prison. It's not jail. What do you do? Maybe you've got some ideas. Maybe you've got your own stories to tell. Maybe you know some people who have been affected and you've seen how their kids have grown up in one of these households. We want to hear from you. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. And once again, if you would like to download Living in Shadows, you can do that by logging on to wisconsindec.org. That's wisconsindec.org. And Sue, you focus on methamphetamine in this documentary. Is there any reason why you picked that drug out of all of the drugs that are abused in society?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, I was gathering background information for a video I was producing in 2003 about methamphetamine, and went to the first Wisconsin Summit on Methamphetamine, and we were broken down into different groups. And our group was focused on the children and how can we help them. And, of course, with my background being in, you know, film production, I thought, well, we do a documentary and let the kids tell their stories. So that was, you know, it came out of that. But also, you know, methamphetamine in particular, because people use it for extended periods and they're up for days at a time and then they sleep for days at a time, you have a unique set of dangers that come with that, where children are unsupervised while their parents are passed out. Meth addicts aren't hungry, so there's no food in the house. If they're cooking meth, there are dangerous chemicals around that children, even crawling on the floor, are absorbing into their skin.
As a reporter up here, every once in a while you'll hear about a fire hitting a trailer in, an explosion in the middle of the woods, and the sheriff will release a statement saying that it's suspicious, but they don't think it was arson. Well, you know what it was.
It could likely have been a meth lab. And, you know, part of the reason, I believe that the number of incidences of meth labs being found in our state is being reduced because of the efforts of law enforcement. However, we have an awful lot of unpopulated geographic area in our state, which is, you know, prime for doing a clandestine meth lab.
And, Andrea, methamphetamines, it's a pretty nasty substance.
It absolutely is. While you guys are talking, I'm reflecting on some of the research that's being found and stated. You know, we've had pieces of chicken breast in a refrigerator that's next to the actual methamphetamine chemicals, and the chicken breast tests positive. So as Sue's saying, these babies are crawling on the kitchen floor, absolutely they're being exposed to some of these chemicals.
They're inhaling the fumes in the meth lab, and the substances that are used to manufacture methamphetamine in these homemade labs, it's certainly no chemical that you'd want to ingest.
No. Many of the chemicals are lethal on their own, and then when you combine them, they're so unstable and dangerous. And yet you have people who are making meth, or even sometimes when they're using meth, they'll filter things and so forth, and then they put that in the refrigerator. A child thinks it's a cup of Kool-Aid and drinks it. There was just a case like that in Kentucky.
We've had an effort to crack down on the manufacture of methamphetamines by restricting the availability of some cold medications. Has that helped?
Absolutely. The pseudoephedrine laws have been phenomenal for our state and really across the country. While they are reducing some of the meth labs, it's, you know, kind of a false assumption to say that meth is no longer an issue. It's always going to be an issue. Where there's a will, there's a way. But those laws are most definitely helping.
And Sue, what you were mentioning about Wisconsin, especially northern Wisconsin, being a prime territory for meth production because it's so spread out and unpopulated, well, it's a serious problem on some of our Indian reservations.
It is. And one of the people that we interviewed in the video is a member of the Chippewa tribe in northwestern Wisconsin, and she tells us that it's rampant on her reservation. She has helped raise 15 nieces and nephews because the parents had issues with drugs or alcohol.
Her name is Nancy, and let's listen to her stories. This is another excerpt from Living in Shadows.
I'm a member of the St. Croix tribe of Chippewa here in the northern part of Wisconsin. I can tell you I'm surrounded by it. Meth is all around me here. I have a brother serving 23 years in a federal prison. I've seen families split up. They lose their children. They lose their pride. I mean, everything goes, and it doesn't matter to them. I mean, they don't even have homes after a while. They don't have anything. I've raised probably 15 of my nieces and nephews. With one of my nieces, I noticed time and again I would go down and there was no food in the house. If they bought food, they actually traded it for meth, and that's how the kids were out of food. What I've seen with the babies, I would go visit and watch them walk around on the floor and their diapers hanging down. That poor babies always had really bad diaper rash because they're either set in their cribs or playpens or set on the floor and left to entertain themselves. You know that they aren't getting what they need, the love and the attention. And I've had custody of Jordan since he was born, a couple days after he was born. Right after he was born, he was in the regular nursery. And I noticed a twitching in him. You know, he kept twitching. His body would twitch all over. And I asked, I said, why is he twitching like that? And she said, Mom, I was using just before Jordan was born, and that's what the twitching was.
Nancy of the St. Croix tribe describing her experiences with methamphetamine addiction on the reservation. And you know, with Native Americans, we've taken their land away from them. We've taken away their pride, their way of living, their traditional means of sustenance. We put them on these reservations, and as if that's not bad enough, they have to deal with this.
We are trying to provide resources specifically for those populations. In 2008, we actually conducted the very first tribal DEC training, and now, gladly, Wisconsin is a model program for that all across the country. From that training, we were actually able to get three tribal communities on board with DEC programs, and that is a huge triumph for us, and it's working in those three tribal communities.
Is that difficult to get some of the tribes actively cooperating with something that's effectively being run by the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children?
Right. It is, but it's not just a tribal issue. It's all counties. Every time you're talking about jurisdictional issues, every time you're talking about a cross-pollination between all of the different disciplines that are involved in DEC programs, we have to find out what are your strengths, what are your limitations, what do you need from me, what do I need from you, so that we can swiftly identify these kids. So every time you get more, you know, two or more cooks in the kitchen, it becomes pretty crazy, but that's where our coordinating mm-hmm. efforts come in, and where the steering committee comes in to really say this is the ideal situation and these are the best practices that are out there to really make this a successful program.
And Nancy was talking about her brother, 23 years in a federal prison. How much, and I know the answer to this question, but how much of our problems with law enforcement, with crime, with people in prisons all come down to substance abuse, drug and alcohol abuse?
Well, Andrea may have some statistics on that, but I would venture to say that the majority of people, you know, in prison either have substance abuse or mental health issues, and often both. And, you know, my question is, are they receiving treatment while they're in prison, so that when they come out, they have the tools to avoid those same behaviors?
And it's a catch-22. You got to put them in prison in order to protect society, but at the same time, they're sure not getting better in there.
Well, it protects society and it protects them, actually. If they weren't in prison, I've interviewed so many people that say, if I were still using, I'd either be in prison or dead. And those seem to be the two avenues.
And methamphetamine, we've heard, for instance, that some of our prisons are having incredible dental bills because the teeth of meth addicts fall out when they're in their 30s.
Right. When you are talking about so many of these under the kitchen sink kind of chemicals that are used in the manufacturing of methamphetamine, and now you're talking about smoking that and placing that in your mouth, absolutely there are some, we call it meth mouth. It's some nasty dental damage, and it is costing us thousands and thousands of dollars in our criminal system.
Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. She drove up from Madison for this show. Sue Reitz of Rosinski and Reitz Communication, the producer of just a great short documentary. It's 25 minutes long, but boy, does it pack a punch. It's called Living in Shadows. And again, you can download it at wisconsindec.org. About 15 minutes left of the show. If you'd like to join us, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Those numbers again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742, as we talk about the innocent victims of drug abuse, the children living in drug abuse homes, particularly methamphetamine homes. It's a particular problem in north central Wisconsin. Our guests, Sue Reitz of Rosinski and Reitz Communication and Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. And want to play one final segment of your documentary, Sue. We're going to be looking at Sarah and Jade, the 11-year-old.
Yes.
Who, you know, as we said in the beginning of the program, it's difficult to get kids to open up on camera. And somehow you managed to get her to open up and tell her story. Sarah's struggling right now to get her own life together and struggling to do something that she never probably thought she'd have to do when she started abusing drugs. And that's reestablish her own role as a mother. Because as we're about to find out, the children of drug addicts often become surrogate parents for themselves.
She learned early on how to take care of herself because I wasn't there. She was taught not to bother me. Take care of yourself, do it yourself. If she was home with me, she was doing her own thing. And if she was trying to bother me, there was a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming.
Well, sometimes when I had to take care of my sister for meals, I would have some trouble making stuff. Like sometimes she would ask for mac and cheese and I would accidentally burn myself because the water boils over.
Jade is definitely the mom, and that was probably one of the hardest battles when I decided to try to get clean, was trying to regain that role as I am the parent. And even to this day, she still will mother Trinity, and she's very protective of her little sister.
I try to maintain a household. My mom didn't clean anymore. The house was filthy. I mean, you walked on it, your feet would get black. I mean, there was stuff everywhere. They weren't feeding us. We turned on a stove and we figured everything out for ourselves. I can remember standing in that kitchen just being so angry, you know. I couldn't ever go out and play with my friends because I had stuff I had to do. I had chores. I became the mom, you know. They weren't the parents anymore. I was.
Sue, some of your thoughts in putting that segment together.
Well, parentification is when a child has the responsibilities of an adult foisted on them at a young age, and that's what we're hearing right there. Amanda's talking about basically losing her childhood because with her mom and stepdad's addiction, she's left to take care of her younger brothers.
Yeah, that was 19-year-old Amanda.
Correct.
At the tail end of that segment.
Correct. So she's left to do the cooking and the cleaning and make sure that the boys do their homework and make sure they take a shower when they need to and that they get up for school and they're dressed properly and all of those things that parents should be doing. And she was also caretaking for her mother in some respects, you know, making sure that, you know, she wasn't getting too far out of line and just, you know, she just really became the parent.
And she was doing all of that while she was using meth herself.
The mother was using meth at the time. Amanda was not.
Amanda was because in an earlier segment, she said her father taught her how to use it when she was 14.
Right. He showed her how to use it. She was not using it at that time,
at
though.
At the time.
Yes.
Andrea, your thoughts on children who become parents.
I think this segment is so important because it actually leads into the next segment that's about educational challenges. And it gets back to what I was talking about before, where we are all approached with this child that might be the problem child in our environment, in our classroom, in our co-curricular activity or on our caseload. And we have to find out why are they the problem child? And it goes back to maybe what Amanda's saying. I have to do all of this for everybody, and yet you're expecting me to do A through Z. And it becomes difficult. And we have to then say, you know, not only identify that, but then change our line of thinking and say, what can I provide to this child to make them back into that innocent person that they're supposed to be?
Now, Andrea, you, as we discussed earlier, you're a teacher by profession.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you're working for the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children now, but you were teaching English.
I was.
And it's got to be such a challenge when you have kids like that, to get them back on course in an academic setting and try to get them to the point where they catch up with their peers and maybe even can realize some dreams and go on to college and higher education.
Right. That's why we encourage so many individuals in that educational profession to kind of come to our conferences and learn about these issues. I'm reminded of a study that is actually conducted by a doctor in Kentucky. And what they are doing is they have identified a group of individuals, babies, that were born cocaine addicted. And they are being tested about learning disabilities at ages 3, 5, 7, 9, and 11. And the issues of ADD disorder are really crazy. As time goes on, maybe at 3, 5, 7, it's not too much identified. But by 9 or 11, they are experiencing so many of these issues. And again, you kind of have to wonder what stems from that. And for that population, it was the cocaine. It's not always drugs, but...
And so much of that ends up being biologically ingrained. I mean, it's not something you can unteach easily.
Right. All the more reason for those resources to kind of come in and for all of these professions to really swoop in and help out.
Well, drug addiction is definitely an intergenerational issue. And what Andrea and others like her are trying to do is interrupt that cycle. If we can identify these children young, or at any time during their childhood, and get them the resources that they need so they can realize that this is not how they have to live their life just because their parents did. Get help for the parents so that they can resume their roles within the family, their appropriate position within the family. Then we can eventually see less and less of this. That's the goal.
So it's a very bleak picture that you paint through an awful lot of this documentary. Where does the hope come in?
The hope comes in when either the parents recognize that they have an issue and they get treatment. Maybe they're arrested, or maybe they've just hit bottom, no money or whatever. When the parent gets treatment, it ripples back to the child, and then the parent starts modeling better behaviors and so on. Kids can be resilient even if the parent never gets treatment. They can see, like Amanda says in there, I learned what not to do. I learned what not to be. So she's looking at the example that her mom and stepdad set, and she's trying to do something different with her life.
Instead of doing what most children would do, which is modeling themselves after their parents, the parents, instead of being a positive example, they become a negative example.
Correct.
Andrea, how do you judge whether or not you're making progress?
I think on several levels. When we have a county that says, you know what, we want to be proactive about this, we've got a tribal community that says we want to be proactive about this, or when we have those communities that say, you know what, we kind of had an accident about this, and now we need to implement this program. When those programs are implemented, then I know that our outreach is working, our education is working. We actually hand out backpacks for every child that's identified, so we definitely have few stats in our states about that. And the stats are such a difficult task because each discipline is working on gathering their information differently. They're identifying them differently. They're recording them differently. But when we hand out those resources and we know that these people are even just attending our conferences, we are at least educating someone out there.
Are these different organizations that deal with different aspects of this problem? Are they coming together? Are they sharing resources?
Yeah, the communication bolstering is wonderful. And that's really what these programs are about, is I need to know what you need from me and what kind of resources we have to all bring it into these families, because that's what it's about. It's about helping these families.
Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, tell us again about that conference that's coming up in Madison in September.
Sure. It is coming up September 16th and 17th. It's at the Chula Vista Resort in the Wisconsin Dells. If you are interested in attending, please go to wisconsindec.org, and you can download the registration form. We have scholarships available if the lodging is a little too expensive, and the registration fee is only $30.
WisconsinDEC.org, and that is also the website that you go to download your free copy of Living in Shadows. Sue Reitz, what's next on your agenda?
I'm not exactly sure. Actually, we are creating a part two to this.
Okay.
We had four interviews that we were not able to include because of the time length that we wanted to keep to. So I have four more interviews that I've done that I want to put together into a second piece.
We'll look forward to it. Sue Reitz of Rosinski and Reitz, Andrea Lestarge of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, that website again, wisconsindec.org. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Kelson Quisler and Scott Clark. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder, you can communicate with us now on Twitter and Facebook. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/Route51. If you're on Facebook, put Route 51 in the search bar and then click on our fan page. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now on WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.